to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors, your sanctuary of spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre. I am one of your curators here at the house, Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one. I'm Josh. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Josh. Hello, hello, my friend. We got a pretty packed episode today, so I say we just get right into it, man. Because I know we got some stuff we want to talk about. And who knows? People probably don't like hearing us talk about the niceties of life. They're just like, give me the horror. Give me the horror right now. But we do have a couple things just to kick the show off before we get into the main topic that you and I, me much longer than you. It's probably been 4 months since you told me I needed to watch The Innocents. And it is, was it 60, 61? I want to say it was 61.
I think 61 or 60. It's around that time. It's really early.
Yeah, because there was another one. There was a 2016 that came out as well. That's weird. I put it into IMDb and I didn't. Oh, here we go. It was a little bit farther down. But there was another one in 2016. But you had told me, you got to watch this movie. I finally got a chance the other night. I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to commit to it. And it is on YouTube for anybody who wants to see it. The version I saw had subtitles that looked of some kind of Latin root, like the root language, or the language was rooted in Latin somewhere. I don't know specifically what it was, but it. So I had to just kind of ignore that. It was in English. It was in the original dialect. Yeah. It just had subtitles underneath it, but that was fine. It didn't bother me. It was pretty easy to ignore. And you hyped this thing up to me, and I gotta say, man, it really came through. You were 100% correct, and I know sometimes Phil is what I call. Well, I guess I don't have to call him sometimes Phil on this show because on the other show I'm with Phil. But a friend of ours that I know you've gotten to know a little bit who listens to the show regularly, and he started to enjoy horror because of our show. You know, he gave us a lot of the credit. He took the time. He checked this one out. He said the same thing. I actually skipped. He was talking about it on his show, and I actually skipped ahead of it really quick because I didn't want any spoilers at all if there was going to be anything spoiled. But, you know, you really praised this thing, and it's interesting. I was thinking about it after I finished it because you and I the other night were also talking about this movie, Cat People, which I had picked up. And you're like, oh, you know, you gotta be a little more forgiving because of the time frame, and I disagreed with you because I'm like, you know, like The Unholy Three I think is just amazing, and that was a silent film. Or Nosferatu with the pacing and things like that. There is some of that that is forgiving. But this is a movie that I think in a lot of ways was very ahead of its time. You know, outside of an art house. I think you might have saw some stuff like this. Maybe some small indie art house stuff. But as far as a big budget, major motion picture, this hit on every level. Excuse me. You know, the cinematography was beautiful. Like the landscape was gorgeous inside the, I don't know if it was a castle or a manor, what you would call it, but I'd call it a castle. Like it was just,
it's basically a castle. Yeah.
The cinematography was beautiful. The performances were good. The tension was amazing. And, you know, we won't spoil too much about it, but I will say it's very ambiguous. There's not a ton to spoil because it kind of leaves it up to you. You know, what do you think was truly going on? And I didn't read a lot after the fact. It was late at night when I watched it, so I just finished it, turned it off. I didn't read into any of the wikis or maybe any of the theories about what really happened. But it's a great little, would you call it a ghost story? I think,
I would say it's a ghost story, yeah.
Ghost story, psychological thriller, depending on what your view of the events that actually transpired are. And I love the way that it opened up with the creepy singing.
That's the best part about it. It's usually just kids singing can be really creepy. But if you start a movie with a black screen and just a little girl singing solo, no instruments, just her singing a scary song, it's
in like a really whispery voice too. I mean, it was good. And the story, for those of you who might not be familiar. You have a woman who becomes the governess to these two children who are under the care of their uncle. I don't remember if they ever said what happened to the parents, why they weren't with their parents, but their uncle is just unmeasurably wealthy. Like, it seems like, yeah. Because she meets him for the first time in this giant, beautiful, whatever it is. And then he sends her to this other castle. And he's like, oh, you got to go to the other manor. That's where the kids are. You have two kids, Miles and I can't remember the
Flora.
Miles and Flora, these two kids. So she's going to be their governess from here on out. And he tells her pretty much just make sure they have a happy life. And go take care of them. And the rest of the movie, after she gets to this place, strange events start to occur. You know, she starts to see things and is hearing things. She's convinced of one thing. But as the audience, we're never really let completely in. Like, we don't – especially – I mean, those kids gave some great performances at the end of that movie.
Yeah. Those kids are creepy.
Yeah, super creepy. And especially her dialogue exchange right at the end of the third act with Miles, like that whole thing with stuff going on in the background. I was like, what is going on here? And then Flora screaming from the other room, like that blood curdling, like a truly terrified scream. But I got to say, I'm bummed it took me so long to watch it, but I'm glad that I finally did. Very, very cool movie. Super cool movie. So thanks for the recommendation.
Everyone should see it. And what's really funny is when I recorded the episode with Micah a few weeks ago, I was at her place and we just talked a little bit afterwards. And she told me she was reading lots of older stories as well. She was getting into reading older stories. And she talked about this one called The Turn of the Screw. And I thought, like, that title sounds familiar. Yeah. And she started telling about it's about this this woman. She's going to this old manor, and she's taking care of these children, and always just saying how nice they are. And I thought, that sounds so familiar. And then I realized that's The Innocents. So
right.
She hadn't seen that one either. So I gave the movie to her.
Oh, nice.
She actually said she doesn't like the book. The book, at least the German translation that she was reading, is very just boring and there's nothing happening at all.
Oh, really?
And I said, yeah. So I don't know. Also, what's interesting is this movie is the screenplay is written by Truman Capote.
Is it really?
Like, yeah.
Nice.
And he's not one you think of when you think of these horror movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but you can actually see, I guess, once you say that, you know, it's a very... It's not just a horror movie. There's a lot more going on, I think. And maybe he's the one who brought some of that to it. You know, when he decided to take this, as he wasn't just a horror guy, because it is very layered. There's so many different things going on at the same time, and it's one that I'll probably go back and revisit a few times because I do feel there's more that I can pull away or extrapolate from this thing, and it's very cool. Yeah, it was good, man. And does Micah listen to the show?
Every now and then, I think. She doesn't listen to every episode, I think, but she does. And she will listen to this one, but she's got to watch the movie first. I told her already that we're going to talk about it.
Well, hi, Micah. thanks for filling in all them times. But yeah, it was very good, man. So thank you for the recommendation. And like you said, if anyone listening has not seen this movie, definitely check it out. It's really, really, it was just great. I mean, I can't think of anything that I disliked about it. Everything was just, everything was there.
And usually with these like scary ghost movies from the 60s, they're often like, I the first thing that comes to my mind is like House on Haunted Hill, which is like funny and kind of, but then there's also this other one that I can't think of right now about this haunted house as well. Like there's lots of scary ghost stories from the 60s, but most of them aren't as scary anymore.
No, you'll get like a weird like a film cell like layover of a ghost like floating around in the corner, whereas with this you didn't get any of that. It was it was very, very psychological, and I enjoyed it. It was super cool. And you got a chance to watch a movie this week, which I'm glad you finally got a chance to get around to.
Yeah. I actually watched this movie like 3 or 4 weeks ago and wanted to tell you about it on the show, but we didn't get to it.
Yeah.
So then I always skipped it. And now I said, let's talk about it this time because I think you actually said that I'm not allowed to do the show anymore if I don't watch this movie. So at some point I had to.
And I apologize. I apologize for that noise. There's a motorcycle going by. I'm right next to the window, and it's so nice out that we've got all the windows open, getting some fresh air in. But yes, this is one I've wanted you to see for a long time. I am a really, really big Neil Marshall fan. I have been since this movie, which I knew nothing about this movie. I worked at a video store when it released on DVD, and I just happened to see it. And I was like, oh, I'll check this out. And then after I saw it, I was like, who is this guy? And then continued to follow his career. And he's done some really cool things with horror, but I don't feel like he's done a lot. Not really. Well, he just did. What was the one he just did? Let's see.
Yeah. But while you look it up, we mentioned the title yet. It's Dog Soldiers.
Oh, yes. I guess we should say. Yeah. We should say that. Oh, no, he's got the Hellboys coming out. But he did a couple episodes of, or one episode of Westworld. But Tales of Halloween is really the last. He did the segment in Tales of Halloween, the Bad Seed segment, which was fantastic. I didn't know he did a couple episodes of Game of Thrones, which is really cool. But
and
he did the
Westworld and Hannibal.
Yeah, Centurion, which is a great movie if you've never seen it. Doomsday was okay, but The Descent. Dog Soldiers. The guy's done some really cool things, but Dog Soldiers. So we're looking at 2002. This one came out, so it's a little bit older. And I'll let you really dig into this because you haven't seen it. I've seen it probably 15, 20 times. I always just throw it on in the background sometimes. But it's so go ahead, let us have it.
Yeah, so I had never seen this before, and I actually managed to still not know much about it. I knew it was about a group of soldiers who encounter werewolves in some sort of way or form, and that's what happens in the movie. And I think this is one of the best werewolf movies I've seen, because I feel like there are a lot of not so good werewolf movies, or at least there's not that ton. Many movies in general.
Now the only other current one I really think of is Late Phases. I really like that, Late Phases.
That I haven't seen yet. But with this one, it's a group of soldiers who are like on a training mission in the woods somewhere. Like it's not even a real thing at first. They're just training there.
Yeah, they're kind of like I don't know what they call them in the UK, but over here it would be like the Army Reserves, where you go for the weekend and you do drills and you like do practice things in case you ever need to be called in to actually go fight. And so these guys are kind of like a reserve unit, and they're just out there practicing, essentially. They're just out in the woods practicing fake bullets. They're shooting blanks, stuff like that. And continue. And
then the other team is basically – they find the other team completely – almost all of them killed, only one left, and he's like wounded. And so they try to get away and find out what happened. And soon enough they find out it's werewolves. And I don't want to spoil this movie either, because I feel like this is one that isn't talked about much. So I don't know how many people have seen it these days.
And some really good performances. I'm a huge fan of Sean Pertwee. I think he's always good. And in this one, he's great. He plays the grizzled battle tested. Even though this is practice, and a lot of these guys are complaining throughout the thing. They're like, oh, I want to be watching the footy. Like, there's a big match on that they want to be watching. And he's taking it more seriously, but he's a leader that they all look up to and is an on the ground leader. Like he's there with them the whole time. And I love his story about the tattoos. Like that was a really, great story that he puts in there. Kevin McKidd, been in a ton of stuff. Liam Cunningham is always good.
Yeah, he's such a good asshole.
Yeah, he really is. He plays a great one. And like you said, I think we shouldn't say too much about the plot, but couple notes that I have on it and stuff that always impressed me. I love the practical werewolves. I thought they did a good job making the werewolves look really cool.
They looked actually realistic. Like they looked like something that could happen. Like so often you see like they look really shit, but these looked really good.
Yeah.
And the gore in general was really well done.
Yeah, and this isn't spoiling too much, but at one point, one of the characters actually has their like guts hanging out. And he's like, my guts aren't supposed to be on the outside. My guts are supposed to be on the inside. And he's like, well, we'll just put them back in later. But you're right. They didn't skimp on any of on any of the effects. So here comes my motorcycle again. This guy just, oh, he's got it. That's cute, though. He's got his kid on the back. His little daughter was on the aww back with him. But yeah, so you liked it. You enjoyed it.
I really liked it. It's so much fun. This is one to rewatch. And usually with werewolf movies, I feel like they take their time. Like even the of course the 40s one is really slow in comparison to today. But also the other werewolf movie I really liked is the American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, it's classic.
But with more recent movies, I'm not that into them. I don't search for them. But I think I've seen the Wolfman remake, and that was kind of boring in parts, I feel like.
Oh, see, and I really like that one. It was a little bit slower, but I'm a big Benicio del Toro fan, and I liked the aesthetic of that. I thought they captured the look and the vibe of kind of this old world, you know, existence, yeah, really well. And Anthony Hopkins is always enjoyable. But there are a lot. I mean, you think of, you know, like The Howling and Silver Bullet. You already mentioned American Werewolf in London, which, what was the name of the bar? The Slaughtered Lamb? Was it? I always thought funny. Yeah, I always thought that was cool. And even they're kind of, it's like a teen girl werewolf movie, but the Ginger Snaps movies.
Yeah,
those are okay. But I would encourage you to watch Late Phases. I think that's one of the better werewolf movies. And I think what this one did really well is it kind of took the werewolf genre and played with it a little bit. It wasn't your cookie cutter werewolf story. It really did some neat things with the idea of werewolves.
Yeah, I think most werewolf movies deal with the main character who is the werewolf. But in this one, the werewolf is basically like just an antagonist, like a zombie or a I don't know, something, some illness or something. Like,
yeah,
it's on the other side. You don't you don't follow along a character along multiple days or years, how he's trying to cope with this or trying to find out what's happening. No, yeah, this is, the werewolves are just bad from the beginning.
And the action sequences were good too. Like the actual, you know, once they're, yeah, they're all holed up together. And did you watch either of the Wolf Cop movies?
those are
ridiculous, cheesy B werewolf. The guy becomes a werewolf, this cop becomes a werewolf, and it's just absolutely bonkers, ridiculous from beginning to end. But so cool, man. Glad you got a chance to check that out. Very
and
happy.
It's crazy. The only thing that's really crazy to me is that this is like Neil Marshall directed and wrote this, and this is his first full movie.
Yeah,
and like that shows. Like, I wish he would do much more. Like,
me too. Especially because I mean, he did The Descent, which, you know, a lot of people. I mean, I like The Descent a lot. That first Descent, you and I had talked about a little bit. Just mentioning Neil Marshall back and forth when we were chatting about it, and you know, some of those scenes, like he made you feel trapped, like truly trapped and scared down in that hole. And he's got a great eye for horror. I'm excited to see what he does with Hellboy, because I think he's got a great eye just as a filmmaker in general. And Hellboy deals with a lot of that stuff. And I was looking through his filmography, and they've got him listed. I don't know if he's going to be the guy, but for the Kong sequel, the Skull Island, Blood of the Kong, which I don't know if that's the next King Kong movie. I thought the next one was King Kong versus Godzilla. But he's got a couple listed. The Reckoning, which sounds like to me that could be horror. And then he's got Skull Island, The Blood of Kong is announced, and The Reckoning is in pre-production right now. So I do want the guy to do more, because, man, I really think he's got it. He's got something special that sets him apart from the pack. So, all right. So moving on, before we spend any more time here on the stuff we've been watching, this idea came after I'd watched a movie this past week, and you and I talked about it a little bit, and I said, hey, why don't we do an episode on meta horror? Because meta, so by definition, I did write this down just because I think it really paints a clear picture of what we're going to be talking about here. And as an adjective, it is defined as referring to itself or to the conversations of its genre or self-referential. So it's, you know, it's horror looking in on horror, kind of almost, I don't want to say making an assessment, but talking to the audience in a way and saying, hey, we're with you. Like, we're having this conversation almost at the same time. The conversations that people like you and I have, or other horror fans around the world have, sometimes a movie will take and kind of, you know, nod to the audience and say, hey, we, in some ways it's like, we like this as much as you. In other ways, it's, hey, we understand this is kind of silly, but it's still a fun time. So it's being self-aware. It's horror that's self-aware and referring inward when it's, and as I went through a list or started making my list yesterday, there's a lot of good meta horror out there. You know, and there's some I haven't seen. There's a couple of them, like the I want to say it kept showing up on list, the final horror show, the final horror movie, something like that, which I didn't.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I've heard of it as well too, but I didn't write it down because I hadn't seen it. And then the other one I didn't write down, which I don't know if you wrote it down, because to me it didn't really seem like meta horror, was Peeping Tom, but that
I think they all go for it because. It's a cameraman and like you're seeing it from the point of view of the camera, but I didn't feel it, at least not as this kind of meta that we are talking about.
And I mean, I think by definition, the more I thought about it, I was like, okay, well maybe they're saying, you know, what kind of an audience are you? But they weren't really talking about the horror. They were making a little nod to like, hey, you know, this is, we're, you know, as an audience member, this is what you're seeing. But I feel like they really didn't dig deep enough. I don't know. I kept seeing it on those lists, but I was like, I'm not gonna write it down because it just
the same goes for me with Shaun of the Dead, which I it's on a different level already. But Shaun of the Dead is on lots of these lists.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't feel like it's a horror comedy, yes, but it doesn't feel like it's commenting on the genre. It's just using the genre as a backdrop because that's like kind of what Edgar Wright is doing. Like he always takes a genre and then makes a movie over it, but doesn't, like, he follows the typical horror zombie movie tropes of the outbreak, then the people gathering together and going to a place, but it never feels like it's commenting on these things. It's just putting it in a humorous setting,
right? In a new, the same way with Hot Fuzz, you know, would you say it's a meta action movie? But I really don't think it's. And Edgar Wright is so unique as a filmmaker. He takes, like you said, a genre and just does his own thing with it. And it always turns out good. Like he always does something really cool with it. And with Shaun of the Dead, I didn't add it to the list either, because to me, that's just a really good horror comedy. I don't feel like they were being meta in a lot of ways. Maybe you and I both missed something. Who knows? Maybe there's people who disagree with us.
I think lots of lists that I found that actually just are saying like, horror comedies are meta, basically. Because another one that I've seen on at least one or two lists is Evil Dead 2.
Which I don't think is meta at all.
Yeah, maybe because of the opening where it's kind of like, it's kind of a remake of the original movie. And so maybe they're taking that as meta, or because I think it's just because they think, okay, this is the first movie, but funny, so it has to be all meta and just making fun of the first movie, even though that's just probably what he wanted to do in the first place, but couldn't.
Yeah, and I don't see Evil Dead, and that's a movie I've seen. I've seen Evil Dead 2 dozens of times. Probably closer to like 30 times, 30, 35 times I've seen that movie, and never once where I was like, this is a good meta horror movie, because I didn't feel like they were having a conversation with me at all. And you're right, though, there were a lot of horror comedies on this list, but I don't think that constitutes meta just being a comedy. I think it makes it a horror comedy, and there's some other ones. So why don't we just start with a horror comedy that I do have on my list, and that's Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And Tucker and Dale, I think, does the meta thing almost better than anything else on my list, because up until Tucker and Dale, we had seen, you know, we know what happens when a group of kids goes out into the woods. And, you know, you think of stuff like The Hills Have Eyes or even Deliverance, even though that's not 100% a horror movie. It's still, you know, there's scary things out in the woods. And we always, in a lot of horror movies, you have these very archetypal hillbilly characters that are, you know, somebody will pull up to a gas station or they'll stop over to pick up snacks or something on the way to their cabin. And you always get these kind of really scary hillbilly people that we know are probably going to show back up later on. And with Tucker and Dale are those characters, but the entire time we're given a view behind the curtain, you know, of all the things that could happen that we expect to happen as horror fans. It turns out that they're not responsible for any of this. And they're the entire movie, like, what is going on? And Tyler Labine and Alan Tudyk just absolutely nailed it. They killed it as these characters. But it's looking at the horror genre and completely saying, yes, we know this is silly and this is the way that it happens every time. But what if it didn't? What if it was a lot of accidental things? You know, the girl, I always love when the girl, was it the girl or the guy that runs into the, I think it was one of the men, that runs it's into the tree stump? Yeah, and it spears him. And the whole time, Tyler Labine's just trying to save this girl. But we get that surface level look at these characters. And if you've never seen Tucker and Dale, it's amazing. I mean, it really is an amazing movie.
They actually managed to make it be a movie on its own. Like it's complete. You can watch it on its own and have fun with it. But when you know the rest of the story, the other movies that it follows, you expect what's going to happen, but not in the way it happens. Right. And like they could be the killer hillbillies. Like
right.
And if you think about it from the point of view of the teenagers, it makes sense, especially, and that's also something that I think has to happen at least in some point in the meta movies. It has to be one of the characters that has seen these movies and expects this to happen, and that's why it goes awry, basically. Because
so you have, I think that's I think you're spot on. It's almost taking an audience member and putting them in the movie. It's taking someone who knows how these things normally play out and then making them a character in these situations. But Tucker and Dale, absolutely wonderful. And I do want to mention real quick this movie that is the reason that I had this idea. I watched this the other night. It's on Shudder right now. It's from 2018. It's called You Might Be the Killer. And it stars, what is her name? Allison Hannigan. Yeah, Allison Hannigan, who's really good. And then I think it's Fran. Is it Fran Kranz? He was I mean, he's an American guy, but I think it's Kranz. I don't know if it's Kranz or Kranz, but it's Fran. But I always remember him from The Cabin in the Woods. He was, which is a movie we'll talk about later. But he played Marty. He was the stoner kid with the giant coffee cup bong.
Yeah.
So he played Marty in that. He stars in this thing, and this one is. I did think somebody could add a ton more to the meta horror movie because we've got some really good ones on this list that we're going to talk about. But this was really cool. The movie just opens up with him. He's covered in blood and he runs into this cabin and he ends up calling his friend Chuck, who's played by Allison Hannigan. He calls Chuck and he's like, Chuck, I'm in this crazy situation. There's a killer out there. And Chuck works at it looked like a mix between like a pop culture comic book shop. They had like horror posters all over. And she's like the horror expert who's walking him through all of this on the phone. You know, she knows all of it. And she says, well, you know, they slowly start to deduce and figure out. She's like, are you covered in blood by chance and don't have any wounds? And she, and I like it in a lot of these movies where she's actually putting it out there. And she's like, well, it happened this way, you know, with Michael, with Freddy, with Jason, with Leatherface. And she even has a really great dialogue about Final Girls. And she's like, I won't spoil anything, but there's a really great dialogue about that too. But she really is like a horror movie expert who's talking to him about all this stuff. And slowly throughout this movie, you know, he's trying to figure out if he's this killer or not. But it's the entirety of the thing is her talking to him and putting those pieces together that you and I as horror fans have seen so many times over again. She's walking him through the process. Like, did this happen? Did this happen? Walk me through what happened right here. And then she'll compare it back to all these other horror movies. But it was really good. It was a lot of fun. So I would say if you get a chance to watch it, You Might Be the Killer was cool.
I already looked it up. Like you talked about it on your. I think you told me about it, and you talked about it on the show a few times already on those movie guys. And I remember I looked it up each time because when you last talked about it, I went to my app where I can look if it's available anywhere, and I already had entered it sometime before, and that was probably also because you mentioned it. And yeah, it's still not available over here at all, so I still gotta wait a little bit. But I hope it's coming out at some point.
I hope so too, because it was really well done. Brett Simmons directed this. I'm not super familiar with him, but I might check out some of his other stuff to see what else he's done, because it was very clever and very well written. And that's what good meta horror does. And I think not in every case, but in most cases, you have people who understand the genre. They understand what horror fans like and they understand what makes the genre tick for the most part and what moves along. So I've already said two movies. Why don't you throw something out there? What you got on your list?
Well, I'm just gonna throw the first one out there because we talked about it at length not too long ago. Anguish.
I wrote that down too.
Yeah. It's a meta horror movie, but we don't need to talk about it. Just go back. Was it last week?
Go back and listen to that. No, I don't think it was last week. It was
last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks. Because it wasn't last week. Was last week 2001? I don't remember. Maybe it was last week. Who knows? But it was within. Yeah, it hasn't been too long. So go back through the episodes and find the Anguish episode because that's meta horror before people were even really doing serious meta horror. And that one though, in the same way with Peeping Tom, I think could walk the art house line a little bit. Okay. You know, more of an art film. But at the same time, this guy I think knew exactly what he was saying and kind of forces the audience into a position.
Yeah, even though this wasn't Anguish wasn't as much a play on the horror genre, but it was more or less commenting on horror movies and movies in general.
And horror movie fans. I think the fans, you know, how much are you willing to endure? You know, why do you endure what you endure and go through? But it was good. Anguish was good. Thanks again, Will. Will put us on to
thank you.
Got us watching Anguish.
Yeah, and something else I got on the list, I'm going to go ahead and take two movies at the same time right now, because The Town That Dreaded Sundown, the original and the remake. I don't know if you have those on your list.
I don't have either on my list, and the remake, I agree with you for sure. The original, I'm not sure, only because it was based on true events that actually happened.
Yeah, what's the fun for me? The second one, yeah, for sure, because they're playing the first movie in the theater and talking about its success. And the first one, maybe I remember this wrong, but I feel like even the first one is like it's based on true events, but it's talking about those true events and like talking about this happened here before. But
the first one is the events actually happening. But they it's kind of like a docudrama. Like it's like a news, like you know how sometimes they'll put like the news clips in there at the same time? It does a lot of that stuff, but it doesn't ever really, I think, comment on horror itself and have a conversation about horror. It's just saying, hey, this stuff happened in the same way. You know, Texas Chainsaw opens up with that. It doesn't follow that course throughout, but you get August 18th, 1970, blah, 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 you know, befell the five friends and would later be known as the Town That Dreaded Sundown does some of that, but it really does. It shows you the events that happen. But the sequel is 100% meta horror because, I mean, they exist in a world where this movie exists, where the Town That Dreaded Sundown is actually a movie that's out there in the world. Yeah, which, if that's not meta, I don't know what is. I mean, that's by definition what meta horror is.
Yeah, they start off watching the movie in the drive-in because they do it every year at that certain time, and then the killings start happening. And I think at one point they're redoing a kill from the first movie and then actually showing you the clip of that scene from the movie at that scene. So they're like it's not as much commenting on the genre as well, but it's commenting on the first movie, and it's actually completely meta. Like this is
right. It's saying we know horror movies exist, and in this world, this one exists, and we're a part of it. But no, the second one for sure. The first one not quite as much. I do like that
maybe
first
I remember
movie a lot.
That.
Yeah, I like that first one a lot though.
They're both good. I got them on Blu-ray in a steelbook in a collection.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And before we get into the granddaddy of all meta horror movies, the one that I think everybody refers to as, I mean, probably one of the greatest meta horror movies, one of the most successful just horror movies in general, I want to talk about one of Wes Craven's other movies that I think is often forgotten because it came out before Scream, and that's Wes Craven's New Nightmare. How many movies were we in? We were seven movies in by the time we got to New Nightmare, we were seven movies in. And he really took a franchise that they said was done because they wanted the sixth one. They wanted Freddy's Dead to be the last in the series. And Freddy's Dead, for anybody who's seen it, it's got some goofy moments and some fun moments, but it was a vast departure from the original Nightmare. Freddy, you know, with five, I think three and four are great, but five and six are probably, in my eyes, the weakest in that franchise. But with New Nightmare, he comes back, but we now live in, or the movie takes place in a world where we're dealing with Heather Langenkamp, John Saxon, Robert Shaw, Wes Craven's actually there. Unglund is actually there. They're all who they are in these movies. Yeah. And so it's almost like Wes is, you know, we have a screen in front of us, then he pulls back even farther, and now we're seeing it as we're seeing the audience, but we're another layer behind the audience who's observing this actual movie. And I think New Nightmare does it so good. And the way he, you know, explains it, New Nightmare to me has always been much more of a fairy tale. And I think a lot of that is very evident. The Hansel and Gretel stuff, you know, the kid leaving the breadcrumbs like mom, or no, what did he leave? The pills? Was it the, he left something for her to follow.
Been a long time. I got to rewatch that movie.
Yeah. he leaves something for her to follow. And I can't remember if it was the pills or what it was, but how she gets into the nightmare world. But this, in this space, the movie world and the reality start to blend. You know, her husband is a special effects guy, and he ends up dying. You know, she sees him with the huge claw marks across him. And then Wes explains it. He's like, you know, Freddy, we need a way to capture Freddy. Like, he's finding his way back into the world. It's our responsibility as filmmakers and actors and actresses to recapture this character. And, you know, you've got Robert Unglund, who's he's slowly fading into the space, and he's painting these crazy, really awesome Freddy paintings. I hope, you know, somebody still has that hanging up somewhere. But really cool Freddy Krueger paintings. And so it's looking at the maybe not so much the horror genre, but that specific series as a whole. And it's so cool that Wes came back. He was the one who came back to do that. It was like, I'm going to tell the story, and that Heather had to complete this new movie. And then you even get to the end and she's reading a script of everything that we just saw happen on screen. And so there's so many different levels. And I think it's a great one. It's a great Freddy design too. Like, Freddy looks creepy in the green trench coat, and he ends up turning into the, that big scary like face thing at the end, which was kind of a nod to Nightmare 3, where he eats up Patricia Arquette, which is always a great sequence. But so Wes Craven's New Nightmare, I think, is when Wes really started saying, hey, I might look at horror in a different way. And then in a couple years, maybe it was just the next year.
No, 2 years. Was it 2 years? 96.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a little movie called Scream. And oh, man, did this change the horror genre forever. I mean, it's weird for me to say that out loud, but, you know, the further away we get from Scream, I think the more important it becomes. And you and I talked about, you know, horror leading up to that point and then horror after that point. Like, there's before Scream and after Scream. That's how important this movie was to the genre. And so when did you first see Scream? You saw a scary movie first, right? Did you tell me that you saw a scary movie first?
That was with The Ring. I think with Scream, at least with the... I think I also saw the first scary movie before I saw Scream.
I remember you telling me that.
But I, the first time I watched Scream was actually, like, in a proper setting. I was with a group of friends and we made a movie night. That was the first time I watched it. And that movie blew our minds.
Yeah.
with the ending, which... I kind of still don't want to spoil, even though I hope everyone has seen it at this point.
Come on, man. That's a movie that we can spoil. It's, you know, how many years old now? 23 years old. And it's everybody talked about that movie. Everybody talked about the ending of that movie. And even if you haven't seen that one, you maybe seen some of the other Scream movies or, you know, you kind of expect that twist ending. But starting just at the beginning of Scream, I think is where he said, I'm going to take something and I'm going to start playing with it in a way that you're not expecting. And, you know, he knew what the audiences wanted. And to see a big name like Drew Barrymore, everyone's, you expect her to live. You expect, you know, she was the main person on the poster. Like, the way they were all stacked, you know, there's faces behind hers. She was one of the ones on that first poster that was right all the way up the front. You're like, oh, it's a Drew Barrymore movie. She ends up getting the knife in the chest. And, you know, this is the first time I remember, like, who was it? Jamie Kennedy, who lays out the rules to horror movies. You know, he talks about the actual rules. Rules that we had talked about before. And when I say we, I mean horror fans in general, the entire community. And it's like, oh, you know, if you go off on your own, that's it. You know, and they were watching Halloween at the time, which Halloween helped to really, I think, establish a lot of these rules, is the innocence always survives. You don't have sex. You don't do drugs. You don't drink alcohol. You don't party, because that's almost a guarantee. And, you know, you get those great lines with Matthew Lillard, like, I'll be right back, when he's, you know, making the jokes about it.
One of the best moments that I actually only picked up, I think, when I read about it, is in that scene where Jamie Kennedy's character is watching Halloween on the TV, and he's watching Halloween and saying to Jamie Lee Curtis, "No, Jamie, look behind you. The killer is behind you," or something. And in that scene, behind actor Jamie Kennedy, there's the killer walking by, and that's like, that's like another level of meta, I would say.
Oh, that's, I mean, it's one of the deepest levels of meta. And interestingly, you think about it, you know, the whole time, Courtney Cox is watching she's watching it on a delay on a screen, almost as an audience member. And so she's yelling we yell at the screen or when this stuff's happening, the same way he's doing it. She's doing it. We're watching it again from so many layers behind all this stuff. I mean, Wes did something completely unique with Scream. Yeah. And for those of you who might not know, I always liked that he originally titled it Scary Movie. And that's why they used that name for all of the comedies. And he ended up going with Scream. And you did have that great twist at the end. And, you know, even with the killers, with Billy and I can't remember Matthew Lillard's name, Billy and Stu.
Stu, yeah.
You know, when he says he's, you know, he's got the fake blood on him and he's like, oh, it's corn syrup. Same thing they used in Carrie. Like, I mean, he's referencing like not only these movies, but how they made these movies. And which is just amazing. It is amazing. And I think it was such a breath of fresh air for horror. And it, even for non-horror fans, or maybe people who are just passive horror fans, it brought into their minds, like, maybe I know a little bit more about this than I thought I did. But it did give us quite the turn at the end. Like, I don't think a lot of people really saw that coming. And it gave us an amazing mask, the ghost face mask. You know, you've mentioned it. Mask. Yeah, going out as for Halloween. I had a few of those. I had one of the ones that you ever see the ones where you could pump the hand thing and blood? They made those for a few years and blood would run down the face.
I have never, but that sounds awesome.
They had like a plastic coating over the front, so the blood would run down, then go back into the reservoir, and you could pump this handle, and it would blah blah, blood would come spilling off.
Also, we got to mention with the Scream movies that what we didn't get into, that also, like, they start with a horror quiz, basically.
Yeah,
like that's what happens with Drew Barrymore. Is like he's asking her questions, and if she has the right answers, she's gonna live, and then. He tricks her by asking who's the killer in
Friday the 13th.
And we're not going to spoil that movie, but Scream does.
Right. Scream lets you know right away. And you're right. I didn't even think about that. You know, it's okay. Who is this? Who's that? And she's got to figure it out. She's got to know. It's almost like you have to have this knowledge in order to survive in this world. Mm. And then for the rest of the movie, they play on that. They say, hey, you know, you do this, you do that, you do the other. And Neve Campbell's just, she's fantastic. She was a great final girl. And so moving on after Scream to the next one I've got written down here, which Scream was a meta-analysis of the slasher genre. And I want to say Cabin in the Woods is a meta for almost every horror genre. They took everything. You had every killer or type of killer at their disposal. Cabin in the Woods, it went through a lot of stuff with development and distribution. Because it was made...
Yeah, mostly distribution.
I think it was almost all distribution because it was... I mean, it had been made for a while. I want to say it came out after Thor? Did it come out after Thor? Yeah. But Hemsworth had done it before Thor.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, this movie was completed in 2009. Wow. And then set on a shelf till 2012. I think that's the time it took for it to release, because I think at first they just couldn't find distribution. No one wanted it because That's a horror comedy. Right. Who wants to watch those?
And you look at the names, though. I mean, Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard. I mean, you got two, but maybe they weren't as well known.
Joss Whedon was mostly known for Buffy. I think. And I think around that time also maybe like still for Firefly, which didn't go on after season one. And I think that's like, he wasn't a movie guy yet. He went into movies with pretty much the Avengers, I think. That was his like big movies.
Yeah, that was his biggest movie up until that time. I'm looking through to try and find the actual timeline. And I'm reading here that they wrote the script in 3 days, which is wild that they, but I don't see anything, anything on here about when they actually. I know though that there was some distribution problems, but the movie as a whole, you know, it takes. And should we spoil this? Should we say spoiler alert? Because I think the end is so good. The end is so good, and the reason that it was all going on. So spoilers.
Yeah. Okay, let's do a quick spoiler, just like 1 minute or something.
Okay, so the end. Spoiler alert. Skip ahead 1 minute. The end actually ends with the apocalypse, like a apocalypse of biblical proportions. Like you have this giant, humongous, like come up because they don't do the movie. The premise is that you have to give these sacrifices to these old gods every so often. I don't remember what the timeline was, but you have to sacrifice to these old gods to appease them in order to, they don't show up and take over the world. And then, you know, we see the Frank Kranz character who he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. Like, whatever, man, sorry. End of the world. That's how this is going to happen. So, okay. Spoilers over. And the movie itself, it plays one of my favorite scenes in this whole movie, and it's such a small, subtle scene. But for me, this is what makes it amazing meta, is because they looked at the horror genre and they said, okay, we're going to explain why some of these things happen. And it's when she's carrying the knife and they're like, okay, shock the blade. And she drops it, because we've seen that happen so many times. Or, you know, when they're out in the woods and it's all right, amp up the temperature and pump the pheromones out of the plants. And we got to get these two to connect, because their role, you know, the overseeing body, I don't remember the name of the company, but it was led by Sigourney Weaver, and Richard Jenkins was great in there. And who's the I'm trying to think of the one who I just saw in that other movie who I really like, Bradley Whitford. We just talked about him in Get Out. That's what we talked about last week. We talked about Get Out and Us. But yeah, Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins play this these two guys who are kind of controlling this one scenario. And Bradley Whitford the whole time wants to use the mermaid monster is his big thing. And they have access to all, and I love those sequences where we're going into those containment chambers. And you see, mummies, zombies, killer dolls, Japanese ghosts. Any kind of horror movie.
There's YouTube videos where they went through everything you see. And like there's a lot, like even things that you wouldn't even think of. But also like I like when they go to, they have this short video thing where they show a scene from Japan where they ban Samara from the ring, basically, and the little schoolgirls won.
They're all singing and holding hands like la 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 la. She disappears. But yeah, there's so many. They even had like a Cenobite type character. It wasn't Pinhead, but it was clearly meant to be, you know, a nod to the Hellraiser movies. And they did such a good job in making sure that everything was in there. And as we had mentioned, the group of friends. And the thing that caught me so off guard is when Chris Hemsworth tries to jump that motorcycle, tries to jump the gap in the bridge, and he just hits a wall. Like they have them contained in this, I guess, a force field. I don't know what else you would call it.
They have them, it's the walls from Wakanda.
From Wakanda. Yeah, exactly. It's the same type of dome that's over Wakanda. But they did so much fun stuff in just, you know, explaining why these events happen in horror movies. And Cabin in the Woods, if you've never seen it, it's so unbelievably good. And for a horror fan especially, I think you can enjoy it if you're really not a horror fan. But as a horror fan, it's almost a love letter where they're like, yeah, man, we get it. And we're here with you. Let's just have fun looking at this thing we love and really examining it and seeing what it is. Not only they're not making fun of it, they're celebrating it. in a lot of ways. They're celebrating the horror genre. And I absolutely just love Cabin in the Woods. And I did just read it's on the 100 or 1001 movies you got to see before you die. It actually made the list. Yeah, for good reason.
It's a great movie, yeah. And since we're already talking about Cabins in the Wood, I got a movie that I wonder if you know about this. I found this on some random list and decided to watch it because it's actually available over here. And that's a movie called There's Nobody Out There.
Why do I feel like I've watched this? Let me pull it up real quick because that title sounds really, really familiar.
It's the German title is actually, I think, almost better. It's just called The Bloody Cabbage in the Bloody Cottage in the Forest.
There's Nobody Out There? Why can't I find it?
Either Nobody or Nothing Out There. I always get those two confused. Let me look it up.
There it is. From 91.
From 91. Yeah, it was before. Yeah, There's Nothing Out There. I'm sorry.
No, I've never. That poster is amazing, though. You got like a weird little gremlin. Like you got a scared woman's face. And the font on the poster almost looks like the 50s. You know, the old like Tarantula and Them, all those good.
So I gotta say, the version of this movie I watched was really low quality, and it was a German dub, but it was for free on one of our streaming services. So I watched it, and it's it's about a group of friends going to a cabin in the woods, which belongs to one of the friends, and one of the group is a big horror fan, like really big. Like he's one of those, he is actually scared because he knows this happens in the horror movies, and so like they get to the cabin in the woods and he says like, and next we're gonna have a big party and go swimming naked in the pool and then everyone's gonna die. And the fun thing is they all brush him off, but then shortly after that a group of teenagers drives by, gets out, gets naked and runs into the beach and into the water, and some of the main characters go out and say, "Hey, what are you doing here? Well, isn't this the cabin in the woods? No, this is the cottage in the forest. You're at the wrong place." And they're, "Okay, we're going to leave again." And then it turns out that's actually a bit of a letdown, basically, because even though it's still fun, but then it's an alien monster actually killing them.
Yeah, reading the description, it's like it says a horror buff tries to warn his friends that all this stuff, bad stuff's going to happen, which is cool. And I'm looking right now because it's it's on Prime over here. Nice. Yeah, so I'm going to try and watch
this.
Check
it out.
Yeah, I'm going to try and watch this.
It's interesting because I think this is the first of these kind of meta movies. Like this is the, like before New Nightmare, before Scary Movie. It's from 1991 and it's the oldest one I can find, other than Anguish, which, as we said, is not as much on the horror genre, but on...
Anguish was more looking at horror as audience members, whereas this looks, you're actually putting someone who is a horror fan in the movies, which is really cool. But I'm going to watch this. I'm going to leave it open in my web browser so I don't forget to watch it.
Okay, and another one that's similar, I think, at least I haven't seen it in forever, but there's this movie called You Can't Kill Stephen King.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it.
I have seen this a long time ago in a German dub as well on a bad version, but as far as I remember, it's just a group of friends traveling to Maine, where Stephen King lives, and trying to meet him, and then there's just all these Stephen King-esque monsters attacking them, and they're just trying to survive and being killed one by one.
I think it was on Prime or Hulu or something. I saw it one time, but I never got around to watching it.
Yeah, it looks not as good. It's pretty fun as far as I remember, but I really gotta rewatch it. I just remember that I enjoyed it.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it too.
And that's a different kind of meta, but still, you know, they're like actually trying to meet Stephen King and then meeting all these horror creatures,
monsters along the way.
Yeah.
All right.
Also, I got a question. Like, I actually got a few movies written down where I wanted to ask your opinion. We already talked about Shaun of the Dead. I've got another one that just came to my mind, but I'm not sure. In the Mounds of Madness.
Yeah.
Where it's about a guy trying to find a horror author and then they're finding out his creations are real.
I don't think I would call it meta. Yeah. I don't think I would call it the Mouth of Madness meta, because it's a pretty straightforward story, and I don't feel it has that self-referential element to it, where they're actually kind of looking in on their own. Like, some of the other ones I've still got on my list, I think are, you know, when I compare that to these, I just don't see it there.
Another group of movies that we talked about briefly, which I would say is almost its own genre and you shouldn't compare it to meta, is the Scary Movie movies, which we just mentioned briefly, which it's almost parody is basically the lowest form of meta, I would say, because it's basically just ripping it off and making fun of it in a very direct way.
Yeah, I wouldn't count those as meta. Like you said, they're parody. I mean, they're nothing but parody. They're just taking existing things and changing the scenario for it to be much more comedic than anything else, which they're fun. I know you really like those scary movies. The second one is still my favorite. And the one, if I'm ever in the mood for a scary movie of that franchise, I'll go to the second one, because that one gets me every time, with Chris Elliott is just unbelievably funny. And that was because the second one, they go to the house and it Chris Kattan plays butler character. So it's kind of like House on Haunted Hill mixed in with a ton of other movies.
Yeah, exactly. And I finally watched the fifth and last Scary Movie, and that's shit.
So, I don't know if I've ever seen the fifth one.
Yeah, I mean, like I've loved the first four ones, and then there's a fifth one without Anna Faris, and I think that's a problem because they left her out. But it's just complete garbage. Like, that's the one I like the least of all of them. Like, I love all the others, and I just hate this one. Like, there's such a crass difference between them.
Right.
I don't know. And so I would not recommend for anyone to seek out Scary Movie 5.
Okay, I'll take a pass then. I'll take a pass on it. I've actually got quite a few more, so, and we're already almost at an hour. So we'll go through a couple of these kind of quickly. The next one up on my list is Zombieland. And Zombieland, I think, is it's only meta in certain areas, but I think it's great meta, because they really, in the same way that they lay out all the rules, where they have these rules for surviving a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
And it's the stuff, you know, we think about all the time, or people will mention, well, I'm faster than a zombie, so I'll just outrun them. There really was that, what was that? It Stains the Sand Red, which is really good, where that woman was stuck in the desert and she had to keep out walking that zombie. But in this one, you know, he's got the rules, and I love when they show up on scene. Like, cardio is the number one rule. And so they lay out and they say, yes, we understand the zombie genre and everything that people have been saying about this for all this time, the double tap. Make sure you shoot them twice, because they always come back. And we even saw that in Scream. You know, the killer always comes back one last time at the end. We see that in Zombieland, which I think is great. And they acknowledged and said, yeah, we understand the rules of this world and what's going on in these zombie apocalypse movies. So it's a lot of fun. One that you and I have talked about extensively, which I think is a really great meta that not a lot of people have seen. So we have talked about a lot, but maybe we'll just say go out and watch it, is Rubber. Rubber is a great meta horror movie.
And yes,
it really is, because in the movie, you've got people watching this movie, and it's so weird.
Like an actual audience, like not just like people watching what's going on or being there. No, there's actually an audience on a hill using binoculars to see what's happening.
Right.
And actually commenting on it. Why is he doing that? What's happening? It's great.
Yeah, it's super cool. Rubber is such a weird little movie. I've also got
the killer tire, for anyone who doesn't know.
That just shakes. Robert, was his name Robert the tire?
Yeah, they, Robert.
Yeah. It's so weird. Next up on my list, I've got 2015's Final Girls. Have you seen Final Girls?
I haven't seen.
The Final Girls?
That's the one I'm looking for, but I can't find it.
Oh, man, it's so good. It's a ton of fun. And you actually have this young woman who, her mother was a scream queen. And she's, she just lost her mother, and she actually finds herself like slowly pulled into one of these movies. And so you have so much analysis and conversation going on about what makes a final girl. And, you know, the final girl has been around in horror movies for as long as I can remember. It's not quite as much of a staple as it once was, but it's a term that I don't think is ever going to go away. But this was really neat because her mom was this, you know, great scream queen, and then she gets sucked into this world, into one of these movies that, you know, was one of her mom's. And so she's, like, trying to put it together, like, how to survive a horror movie when you become a part of one. And I won't say too much more because, yeah, you should check it out. It's really good. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really want to. I will at some point.
It's one that I just bought on a whim. Like, it showed up on iTunes, and, you know, it was like $10. I was like, whatever, I'll just buy it. And I'm glad I bought it instead of renting it. Because iTunes, a lot of times what they'll do is when a movie's still in the theater and it's available video on demand, you can rent it for $6.99 or buy it for $9.99. I'm like, well, I'll just, you know, pay the extra couple bucks in case you want to watch it again. After that, I've got one of the most disgusting movies, I think, on my list, which is meta in its own weird way, and it's Human Centipede 2.
I totally forgot to write that down. Yeah. Yeah.
It's and it's meta because you have a person, you know, it's horror influencing real life, which people have always been concerned about. They're, you know, they worry about kids watching this stuff, and will these movies influence people to do these horrible things? And that's all what Human Centipede 2 is about. So you've got this guy who watched the first movie, and he decides he's gonna do it himself, and he's so gross. What's his name? And is he a German guy?
No, he's not a German guy. Okay. No, the doctor from the first movie. That's German,
right?
Guy.
Yeah, that's right. That's the German guy.
Yeah, what's his name? But yeah. That movie, I got Human Centipede 2 and 3, which 3 is also a meta movie.
Yeah.
They're on basically the same level. And I own both of those on Blu-ray. So if anyone wants to see them, I can lend them to you.
Right.
Lawrence R. Harvey. Yeah. He's playing Martin.
Right. And he's such a weird, disgusting little human being in that movie. But he's trying to, you know, he falls in love with this idea and this. And you're right. The third one, they just try and take it to the next level. You know, Tom Six did some weird things with those movies. And I know with the first one, he had said the idea spawned, like, what would you do if you could, you know, what would you do to a pedophile? And that's where he came up with the idea of sew all these people together the way that he sews them together. But in the second one, he's actually watching the movie. He's watching the first one. But the second one has that horrible ending. Oh, that's so uncomfortable to watch.
And so the fun thing, which is almost on another level of meta for the Human Centipede movies, is that the first one ends with, of course, its ending credits. The second one starts with the ending credits of the first movie.
Yeah.
And then we zoom out and it's our new main character watching the movie. The third one starts with the ending credits of the second movie. It's the prison guard watching that movie. And I think, like, then their whole thing is, like, the prison guard, the prison owner is actually the actor from the first movie playing another guy.
Yeah, all the characters or all the actors show back up in one way or
his,
another.
His finances guy is the bad guy from
Martin.
The second movie. Yeah. And I don't know if you know this. I think I've told this once before, but the third movie ends with a zoom out and with the first scene of the Human Centipede 1. Like, it doesn't end that way, but that was an alternate ending that takes it full circle.
Because
it ends with Human Centipede 1 and then the main character waking up and it was all a dream.
That's so weird.
And so we go, like, so, and also what's meta about this as well is just that what happens if you take the beginning of one person and put it at the end of the other one?
Right.
It's the movies are a Blu-ray centipede.
Yeah, in
and
a way.
So that's a whole nother level of meta, I would say.
But it's it's, you know, I don't want to say it's fun because those movies are not fun at all. But the third one's pretty funny. It's got, you know, it lends itself a lot more to the comedy side. But the first two are just awful. Oh, they're awful movies. But
also, all three are banned in Germany. For anyone who doesn't know,
that does not surprise me that those are banned in Germany. I've got two more and then one I know we both wanted. So I've got three more total. The next two I'll go through pretty quick. The first up I have is Shane Black's The Monster Squad, which I don't know if you've ever seen The Monster Squad.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Yeah, it's a load of fun, man. When, for me as a kid, it was like The Goonies with monsters. But these kids throughout the whole thing you know, their kids who are having the conversation, like, is he called Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster? What are the three ways to kill a werewolf? Like, they are huge horror movie fans, and they're laying out, but they're kids having this conversation, and you get all the big Universal players show back up. You got the Mummy, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, the Wolfman, and then Dracula kind of oversees all of these other monsters, and you got Dracula Brides. It's a lot of fun. I think you should check it out. For people who didn't grow up on it, you know, there's some stuff there that it is kind of dated. And kind of the same way, I've met people who are like, oh, I don't like the Goonies at all. I'm like, what are you talking about? The Goonies is great. So I don't know if this is one of those that you really had to be there. I don't think so. And I think as a horror fan, you can find a lot of fun there. The next one I've got up is one that was made twice. You and I think have both agreed the original is the way to go if you can get your hands on that version. And that is Funny Games. And yeah. Funny Games is meta on a whole another level, because you actually break the fourth wall a couple of times in this movie where they'll be like, nope, that's not how it happens. Rewind. And the screen will actually be like, and rewind. And the characters are talking to you as the audience. And he has said many times, you know, when he made these movies, that it was really about anti-violence. And he wanted to show that real violence in the real world is not enjoyable. And he succeeds in doing that. But it's meta in that they actually talk to the audience in this movie. They actually tell you. And I didn't mind the remake. I thought the remake was fine.
The remake is made by the same director.
Yeah.
It's the exact same movie. He just made it in English because Haneke felt like the American people don't understand it if they don't have it in their own language.
Yeah, which I don't think is true. Well, maybe for some people, but, you know.
I think for the people he wanted to reach, maybe even more.
Yeah, I was happy that he did that, because I got to see the remake in the theater, which was cool. Yeah. It was a really uncomfortable experience, but for them to actually look at you and make you question they almost challenge you in a way. These two characters, these little psychopaths, they almost challenge you, and they're like, "Well, what's going on with you that you're sitting here watching this?" And they almost give you time to pause and think about it. And it's like, okay, well, why am I watching this? What am I enjoying this violence for? So Funny Games is on there. And then the last one on my list, which, you know, I had mentioned Scream being the daddy of them all. The next one, I think, is so underappreciated. And it did get its 10th anniversary release. I think it was last year, got its 10th anniversary. And that is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. This movie... It takes meta to a whole nother place. It elevates it to, and this kid exists in a world where Michael was a real killer, Freddy was a real killer, Jason was a real killer. Like, he lives in a world where the all these characters from horror movies that we like were actually real and committed all of these crimes. And the movie, for maybe someone who's not familiar, you get a documentary film crew who's following this guy around, who's trying to prime himself to be the next big slasher. And it's so neat how he does all the tricks. He's like, well, you got to do this. And, you know, he hacks into the library computer, maybe not hacked in, but he plants fake news articles about things that had happened. And he's like, oh, watch this. I'll do this. I'll stand over in the bushes and I'll just make a little quiet noise. And then she'll look over here, but I won't be there. And how many times have we seen that in a horror movie? You know, you hear something in the woods and the character will turn and there's nothing there.
That whole movie. I love that movie. I always lead with the story of how I found this movie, because this movie isn't well known at all. Like, I hadn't heard of it before I saw it. And I actually, there was this website that was pretty new at the time that was selling like used movies, and they were super cheap. And so I was looking to fill a buck of movies, because they have horrible shipping costs. So you need to buy as many movies as possible, so it makes sense. And I found this one movie, and I actually thought it was a making of, a behind the scenes of the Friday the 13th franchise, because Behind the Mask, you know, right, they're just called similarly. And I bought it, and when I got it, I saw the subtitle, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, and then I looked at the bag, and it said something about the killer. Oh, okay, so this isn't the documentary. I just watched it, and it's one of my favorite movies because of how it surprised me. And yeah, it's giving you all the things you need to see. Also, as far as I remember, Kane Hodder is in this.
Yeah,
like he just opens. I think they ring the doorbell at one house, and an old guy opens up, and that's Kane Hodder at some. I think it's the house of Nancy from Friday the 13th from Nightmare on Elm Street, something like that. And Robert England is in this, and Zelda Rubinstein is in this. So we get them all in the same.
Yeah, you get a lot of great genre players. And Scott Wilson was really good. He was so people would probably know him from The Walking Dead. He played Herschel in The Walking Dead, and he's kind of like a retired type killer or a slasher of some sorts. And he reminisces about, oh yeah, when Freddy used to do this, or when Jason used to do that, and how he became, or he almost becomes, yeah, like a mentor to Leslie Vernon. And you have this kid who, and seeing the, you know, maybe we shouldn't talk about the end of this movie, because I do think not a lot of people have seen it yet. And so check it out, because the whole third act is just so cool. Like, as a horror fan, it's an absolute must watch. Like, you've got to see this thing, because they just speak your language throughout the entire movie. It's almost like they're talking directly to you.
It's so great. And talking about Eugene, about the old guy, just one thing. I feel like I've told you this before, but I want to repeat it. There's a fan theory that sounds really good, that Eugene is actually Billy from Black Christmas.
Yeah, I've heard that. I think you told me about that, or you sent me an article maybe about it.
I might have, yeah. I remembered. I think that's like almost official by now. that's pretty cool. But that movie, everyone should see it. And I feel like that movie is still like kind of behind the rug, even though even more and more people are now getting to know about it, because, lots of people are talking about it these days, but still not enough. And also the director, what's his name? Scott Klosterman. He made like nothing other than this.
I thought he produced some stuff, but as a director, I don't think he because you even have little things like that. I think you see the puzzle box is in there at one point from Hellraiser, which is super cool. And then you had the nod to the I think the Red Rabbit, which was from Halloween. Like, when they made this movie, they definitely made it it really was a love letter to horror as a genre and horror fans in general. That says, you know what, you guys are cool. So that's, you know, it's awesome. It's awesome, man. It's such a good movie.
It's great. And they're talking about a sequel, forever.
Which would be cool. Like they would just have to do it right. Like, you need the right people behind it. Because I would hate for it to be a cash grab.
The director is actually involved.
Oh, like, good. Good.
I'm not sure how far they are. Like, I just saw again on IMDb, it's listed as Before the Mask or Before TM.
Okay.
And I don't know anything about it. It's just a follow-up to Behind the Mask, and he's connected, and he said that he wants to do it, I think. But like, there's still nothing happening there. So
that's awesome.
I hope at some point they'll get to it.
And that's all I had, man. I don't know what else you got.
I got a few more that are maybe worth talking about. One, I got a question for you, because I haven't actually seen that movie. But Jason X.
Yes.
Doesn't it have a scene where they're like on a holodeck and
got a scene where they tell him they're like simulate, but see, I don't think that's really meta, because they're playing in a world where Jason existed and actually did all of these things. And but there's a little bit of that, because they say like holodeck, Camp Crystal Lake 1980 or whatever the case may be, and you've got these two women that show up, like, you know, they were the camp counselors or whatever the case may be. And they're like, oh, we're just going to drink beer and have premarital sex. And, Jason ends up going after them.
Yeah, but it's not a meta movie as much as it has meta elements, which lots of movies, especially after Scream, had or added. Like, if you look at the lists online, like, everyone says like, I Know What You Did Last Summer and Urban Legends, which are, they are always kind of maybe taking a stab at it at one line or something, but they're not really meta movies. I don't think they
weren't designed to be meta the same way that Wes designed.
Yeah,
you know, that was part of the plan from the beginning. And yeah, I saw those on some of the lists, Urban Legend, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. But to me, those are just straightforward horror movies. They were Scream without any of the meta level. Because I just recently rewatched I Know What You Did Last Summer, and there was nothing in it that screamed at me meta. You know, they were kids who accidentally killed a person and then went from there. So it was pretty straightforward. Yeah. And Urban Legend, I guess could be meta, but I don't think they were really, you know, the self-referential. I keep mentioning that. I don't feel it was self-referential. They just took these stories that people knew very well and incorporated them into, you know, Bloody Mary and stuff like that, and Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, whatever, all these little things you hear about in your youth. You're like, oh, that's creepy and scary. But no, I don't think that was quite meta. Yeah.
I see it the same way. Then I got Gremlins 2, which is kind of meta, but
I saw that on the list too, and I don't know where the meta comes from. Like, I don't see what was truly meta about that.
Well, I think there I can see it in scenes, because there's actually like a scene where the movie screen the film cuts, and then you see the gremlins in the movie theater and Hulk Hogan saying, "What's happening here?" and fighting the gremlins, and then it goes back to the movie. So there's at least a meta scene in it. But yeah it's
no, and I it's felt one the, of those. I felt the same way about Feast. Feast was on a lot of the lists that I saw, and Feast is awesome. Like, it was one of the first movies to win that Project Greenlight that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck did. It was the first one of the first ones to get funded. I don't think it was the first, but I don't see that as being meta, as more that took the horror genre and kind of flipped it on its head. Like, all the people you thought were going to be the heroes ended up not being the heroes. And so it kind of poked fun, but I don't feel like it was really talking to itself in the same way as some of the others we mentioned. But it's worth a watch. Like, Feast is a great time if you've never seen it. There's a couple of crappy sequels, but that first one is really good. Is really good. Okay. A lot of fun.
I gotta check that out. Then, of course, we talked about Scream. We also gotta at least mention there's three sequels that also are all very meta. Like, they go as crazy as in Scream 2. There's actually the release of Stab, which is the movie.
The movie within the movie.
Yeah, and then they talk about sequels and sequel rules. And then it gets ultimately meta when in Scream 3 they are in the movie set of Stab 3,
which is like Woodsboro from the first movie, and you have everybody who's actually playing the characters in the movies that is there with them,
and so it goes completely like they're going crazy. And then Scream 4 is kind of basically taking it all a step back and going to, okay, let's calm down. We're now in 2014, I think, and they're going a bit less meta than before, but still.
But they're still pretty, because they're having like a horror film festival where all these kids are gathering up to watch Stab movies, and you have the what was her name? Hayden Pelletier played her. But she is like a horror movie junkie, and then Rory Culkin is the same way in a lot of ways, and he's a horror movie guy. So you're still having that conversation about the horror genre, because she, at one point, the killer calls and is like, "What remake, yada yada," and she just starts naming them off, like every remake of every horror movie ever made.
Yeah.
But Scream, it's hard to, when the first one is that good, it's hard to make any sequel. I like two. Two was fun. Three was a little bit silly. But like you
I
said,
like
just,
them all.
Yeah, just looking at three is a meta. No, there's none of them that I dislike. Like, there's none that I completely avoid. But looking, you know, when you look at meta level, that third one, man, they were so many different layers to that going on at the same time.
Yeah. What's funny, by the way, is I got the DVD box set of Scream 1, 2, 3, which is like a nice box set that looks really cool. Got some quotes on it. And there's one that says, where Wes Craven said, "I had always imagined Scream as a trilogy."
Right.
And then
He makes the fourth one.
And then I got the fourth one sitting next to it on its own. Because that's not part of the trilogy, but yeah.
Yeah. It was they're fun movies though. They're still
Sure. They're enjoyable. And the last one on my list is one that I mentioned to you before, and I think that's at least the most meta of all the ones I mentioned that are kind of maybe is slashers.
Oh yes. Yes.
And we talked about it on the 2001 episode. Phil wants to talk us about it, and
Slashers, and you and I had texted back and forth a little bit about it. A movie that I guarantee you not a lot of people have seen, because it's such a weird one, but it takes characters from all these different genres, and it's not traditional meta horror. I don't even know if that's a term, traditional meta horror, because it's not like a huge subgenre. But slashers takes, you know, these certain villain types and puts them all into one place and pits people against them. So in a way, it's telling you, you know, okay, you have to have an understanding of this to know how to survive these things. But then again, I think its meta layer is that it's all done for our entertainment. You know, as an audience member, we go to these things to be entertained. In slashers, they're taking that to another level by creating a game show out of it. And it's like, hey, you want to be entertained? Here's your entertainment. Like, how far do we push the boundaries of entertainment?
And that game show is called slashers.
Right.
And slashers in itself is not a term that's used in slasher movies because... No. It's such a fun movie. Everyone should check it out.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's available streaming anywhere.
In Germany it is.
Is it on like Tubi or something?
I look it up. I look it up if it's available for you anywhere streaming, because in Germany it's actually on like the biggest site. They only have them in most of the movies in German dub, which kind of sucks. But this movie, you don't watch it for the acting.
No. It's a very low budget. I was just looking, you know, the budget, it was made for $165,000 in 2001. And I mean, $165,000 might sound like a lot of money, but when it comes to, you know, making a movie, $165,000 isn't that much. And Maurice Devereaux was the one who was behind this. And yeah, it says a black comedy horror film in which six random contestants are put into a game show where they'll face evil clowns, evisceration, happy doctors, and wild maniacs. And the winner has to survive the terror by being resourceful. It's so weird. It's such a weird, funny movie. And we always talk about Chainsaw Charlie. This was one, you know, you had mentioned how you came across Leslie Vernon. Phil and I, this was one that he had grabbed when I'd mentioned before, we used to go to Blockbuster when they would have the old DVDs in the big bins and you could pick out, you know, pick four movies for $20. And he had already picked three that he wanted, and he just grabbed slashers as, hey, I got to find a fourth movie in order to come up with these four movies. And it was slashers, and we watched it. We fell in love with it. We were like, this is so, now granted, we were probably drinking a lot of beer at the time, but we still just absolutely loved slashers because it's so weird. So yeah, if you can find it somewhere to watch, for sure watch it.
So it's not streaming in the US, but it's in German dub on YouTube incomplete.
Oh, nice.
So, and there seems to be like a playlist called slashers, but every S is with a dollar sign. And that has like 11 parts. So they have the whole movie there.
So you just have to watch it, and it's pieces.
Basically.
Yeah, it's fun, though, so check that out. And we want to know, you know, if there's anything that we missed, please shoot us an email. Our email address is ihohpodcast@gmail.com. And let us know if there's, you know, anything at all that you're like, how could you forget about this or how could you forget about that? Because I think meta is so much fun to have that conversation as a community, as a horror community. And
yeah, but I just one more thing. I have the feeling that I looked it up online about meta movies, and I looked on a few websites and a few lists, and I feel like we talked about almost all meta movies there are. Maybe there's some like meta horror movies. There are probably some other. I just remembered one that's called Hell's a Boppin', which is like a musical from the 40s that's on a film set about making movies and also kind of horror. They're going to hell. It's really weird. But
what was it called again?
Hell's a Boppin.
It's okay.
H-E-L-L-Z-A-B-O-P.
You'll have to send me a link to it. Send me a link once we're done.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. But in general, I feel like there's not that many meta movies out there. And like most of the lists really go like Shaun of the Dead and, yeah, like I said, Urban Legends, which is kind of weird. But I think there's not too many out there, because also if there were too many meta movies, then that would kind of be against the purpose, because
of a meta movie.
If every movie plays on the genre, then suddenly that's a whole genre in its own that you have to play on at some point.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, but there are a few good ones, and in general, I feel like meta movies, at least the ones we talked about, there's not one that I would say is really bad. Like, these movies are by people who love making movies and love the genre, and so these movies are in general probably a bit better than
somebody just trying to make a quick buck, because horror is easy to get into, and horror fans will watch almost anything. I can attest to that. Yeah. We will watch almost anything. All right. So if you want to contact us, like I mentioned, you can shoot an email over or follow us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're everywhere at IHOH Podcast. And as always, if you would jump onto Apple Podcast and leave a rate and review, we would greatly, greatly appreciate that. And for the International House of Horrors, I am Joe Morrow.
And I'm Josh.
And we'll be back next week with all things terrible, horrible, bloody, brutal, gory, and the macabre.